Hello, I'm Prithvi Vratharajan with Lingua Franca here on ABC Radio National, as well as on the World Wide Web. And this music is by Wim Mertens, a Belgian pianist who sings in an invented language. Making up stuff is the theme of this four-part series on constructed languages, or conlangs, exploring the hugely popular Klingon from Star Trek and Elvish from the Lord of the Rings movies, as well as a couple of dystopian Englishes, Nadsat in A Clockwork Orange and Ridley Speak in Russell Hoban's novel Ridley Walker. But first, Silvio Sotomayor, a special assistant to the Language Creation Society based in Berkeley, California, and the inventor of the entirely verbless language, Kaelin. Sylvia, what is it that motivates someone to make up a language? Is it for the fun of it, or maybe to see how far you can take language? I imagine it's a lot of hard work.
Yes to all of the above. There are a variety of reasons why somebody would make up a language. The fun of it is part of it. The seeing how far you can take something is part of it. Just sometimes wanting something private for your own use, to maybe write in a diary or to talk to God or anything like that. People have made up languages for that. To fix some perceived flaw in their own language, usually English, people have made up languages for that. To express certain things that they think their language doesn't do well, like to express women's concerns. There's one language out there that it's called Tokipona, that its reason for existence is to have a closed vocabulary and to say as much as you can with as few words as possible. Ah. And so it only has 123 words, I believe.
So the aim there is to be economical.
Yeah, well, no, it's not necessarily economical, because the sentences come out pretty long because you use the same word, you know, to mean different things, but related concepts. Then there's another language, Ithkuil, whose purported reason for existence is to be very, very efficient. And there can be a two-word utterance in Ithkuil that you would translate in English as several sentences.
Wow, okay. And you mentioned that some languages have been created, or maybe a language has been created to express women's concerns. Did you have an example
in
mind?
That's Suzette Hayden Elgin's La Adan that she wrote for her science fiction novels. And that was expressly created to reflect the concerns of women, with the assumption that, you know, regular Western languages did not do that very well. Yeah, and so one of the things La Adan has is ways to express how you feel about what you're saying, and that would be grammatical, and so you would have to always have a particle or something that expressed that. There's various speech act particles to either, you know, say it's a question or a command, a request, a promise, a warning, whatever. And then there's the evidence particles. So there's a particle that means that something was known because you perceived it. Something was known because it's just obvious, self-evident, logical. Something that was perceived in a dream. Something that's assumed true because you trust the source. Something that's assumed false because you don't trust the source. And so on and so forth. So, you know, there's a variety of those, and then she would use them in the language. And there are other languages, actually, that do use systems like that. So,
And how was it for you, Sylvia, with Kaelin, your language? What motivated you to invent that? Can you talk about that process?
Yes. Basically, Kaelin, as it exists now, is an experiment in figuring out if you can get along without verbs. Because when I was studying linguistics, there's this idea that certain things are universal and show up in every single language, no matter what it is, or at least every single human language. And one of those very basic assumptions is that every language has at least nouns and verbs. And so Kellen was designed to not have verbs. Instead, what it has is a closed class of four, what I call relationals, which basically say what you're going to find in the sentence. So one of them, la, basically says, okay, there's going to be one argument, and all we're saying about it is that it exists. And another one, ni, says there's one argument, and what we're saying about it is that it has recently changed its state. And so usually then there's accompanying words that, you know, explain what has happened.
So that's quite different to the Romance languages. For example, Latin with the noun inflections and the subject, verb, object, those sorts of classes. And so you've taken quite a different approach to language.
Yes, yes.
Was that to play around with language? Or?
Yeah, basically it's to play. Yeah, it was to play, to model something. A number of languages get created just to model something, to play with it, to figure out how it works. There's a language called Ayeri, which has a gorgeous writing system, but it was designed basically to examine trigger systems. There's languages that examine vowel harmony, ergativity, and so on and so forth. There's also a lot of languages that get made up sort of as an alternate history sort of thing. There's a lovely language called Brythenic, and what it's playing with is the idea that the Romans stayed in Britain long enough to basically create a Romance language out there. And so one way to describe Brythenic is it's basically Welsh as if it were not a Celtic language but a Romance language.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and there's a number of other languages like that too. Brythenic was created by Andrew Smith, I think his name is. He's in New Zealand. And Venetic, which is basically the same thing but with Polish, so Polish as a Romance language, was created by Jan van Steenbergen. Jan van Steenbergen. And there's even a world online that they've created where these languages exist and they have histories of the people and who's done what and movements and all kinds of things. It's really quite elaborate. There's people who play with, you know, how strange can they make a language, and some of those have definitely, you know, posited alien speakers. One is called Dreetalk, and it basically has no voiced sounds, so only voiceless sounds and gestures. And then another one is Rikchik. I'm very fond of Rikchik. Rikchik is spoken by a bunch of basically cephalopod aliens with multiple tentacles, seven of which are adapted for speaking, except that, they don't speak with sound. They speak in gesture. And Dennis Moskovitz, who created this, has this whole elaborate way of writing how these gestures are done and writing sentences and all that kind of stuff, and it's just lovely.
if I could just go back to Kellen for a minute.
Uh-huh.
You said that your language has no verbs.
Right.
So is it possible to do things in Kellen, to act?
Yes, it's just done a little differently. One of the questions people always ask me is, you know, how do you say, well, you know, I jumped up and down on the bed? And there's a word that basically means up and down motion, and that's what you would use. Like some languages, Spanish comes to mind, Kellen is more concerned with the vector of motion than the manner of motion. English is more of a manner. You know, you've got jumped and hopped and skipped and what have you, and that's important to us, and we have words for that. But in a lot of languages, that just isn't important enough to necessarily mention unless you really want to emphasize that.
And you call Kellen a non-human language. What do you mean by that?
Mostly, since I was going to break a human universal, I figured, if it's not going to have verbs, then it's not a human language, so it must be a non-human language. The speakers of Kellen, who I've also kind of created, are mostly human, but maybe not entirely. It depends. I'm still working on that part.
And so you said you've created some speakers of Kellan. Do you mean fictional characters? Or?
Yes, fictional. Fictional, not written down anywhere besides my website, but yes, it does have a world and a planet that goes with it, and various alternative histories, which I haven't just settled on which one I think should really be it. There's a number of people who have done that, who have created whole worlds to go on with their language. People get very elaborate with some of this stuff. It's a lot of fun.
And has anyone, have any people tried to learn your language?
Occasionally, yes, some people try to learn it, and I mostly try to cooperate, but I have not necessarily made up, common sentences like where's the bathroom and another beer please and things like that that people might actually use. It's still slow. I do have a blog online where I post one word every day from my dictionary and kind of try to explain how to use it, or at least what it means. Actually, I appear to have started a trend, since I know of at least two other word of the day blogs for various conlangs. So hopefully there are more.
Okay, and certain constructed languages like Klingon and most recently Na'vi in the movie Avatar have gained immense popularity. They have their own fan cultures. Why do you think these ones are so popular?
Well, mostly because Star Trek and Avatar are very popular. Some of the other languages that have speakers are because they've either caught on. I mean, Tokipona supposedly has 100 speakers. But unless one of those languages then becomes part of something in popular culture, most people just won't hear about it.
The linguist Sylvia Sotomayor is a web designer and the inventor of the Kellan language. Apart from movies and TV, fictional worlds for invented languages have also been created in literature, like in the futuristic novel Ridley Walker, named after its 12-year-old main character and written by the now octogenarian Russell Hoban, whose own playing with sounds were his motivation for constructing a language. Wasn't it, Russell?
Well, I've always been preoccupied with sounds. I mean, that's part of my particular mindset. When I'm alone in the house, for example, I often walk around speaking nonsense words aloud, like parv or juk. And at some point, I read a story by Gerald Kirsch called Voices in the Dust of Annan, which was about an explorer in a future time who falls through the wreckage of what used to be London, and he finds himself among little people who are, a degenerate form of the human race, who live on rats and dress in rat skins, and they sing songs in a corrupted English. They sing Uko Karabin and Balasamo, Balasamo, da 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 da. And this intrigued me. I thought I'd like to do something with that sort of messed up language. And so Ridley Walker gave me a chance to do that.
And there'll be more on Russell Hoban in part 3 of this 4-part series on constructed languages. And next week, Mark Okrand, the inventor of the Klingon language from Star Trek, which has a worldwide following. I'm Prithvi Vratharajan for Lingua Franca at abc.net.au/RN. Bye for now.
On the Book Show, critic and professor of literature at Oxford, John Carey, has researched a huge archive of previously unpublished journals and papers for his biography of William Golding, creator of Lord of the Flies. His research reveals a man plagued by fears and phobias, a war hero who struggled with alcoholism and depression. Download or stream this program from the Radio National website.